This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen, Men,
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, April 15th, 2003. The liberation of Iraq became the plundering of Baghdad. Thousands of looters ransacked the vast industrial parks on the south side of the capital, converting highways into shopping aisles as they wheeled, dragged, carried, and drove away booty, ranging from cars to card tables. This was the report of William Brannigan and Rich Atkinson, Washington Post staff writers, on Saturday, April 12th. Hospitals have been stripped bare, dealing a major setback to the medical system. Everyone is afraid to go out, said Dr. Muhammad Ali, a senior anesthetist at the neurosurgical hospital. All but a few of the hospital staff have stayed home in recent days, and we are unable to cope. Robert Collier, reporting in the San Francisco Chronicle, gave an inventory that we will discuss today on Taking Aim as we discuss the plundering of Iraq. As Robert Collier reports, looters had hit many hospitals, nearly all government ministries, businesses and headquarters, the Iraqi Museum, the Saddam Arts Center, the National Library, all state-owned supermarkets, most public universities, including the engineering and nursing colleges, many embassies, including those of Germany, Finland, South Korea, China, Jordan, and Turkey, the French Cultural Center, and the headquarters of UNICEF. He continued, most state-owned factories, including the Baghdad plants that make auto batteries, electronics, and electrical gear. The five-star hotels, the luxury hotels throughout Iraq, also were not spared. The Al-Rashid, the Al-Mansur, and the Babel. Iraqis from all walks of life, reacting to this, exclaimed repeatedly, the United States just wants to drive down Iraq, ruin us as a viable country, and grab our oil. Ralph?
Anything and everything goes. The plundering of Iraq, the article itself, makes very clear the dynamics of this. The stealing was watched by U.S. forces. Quote, we're not going to stand between a crowd and a bunch of mattresses, Major General David H. Petraeus, commander of the 101st Airborne Division, told his senior troops. And indeed, the U.S. commanders stated clearly that they were not only unable but unwilling to prevent what they called pilfering. This is the new income distribution program, declared a chief officer of the 101st Airborne. And indeed, the attitude of the U.S. authorities was made abundantly clear. A civilization torn to pieces, reported Robert Fisk. The city at the mercy of thieves and gunmen, and the city's most important museum, something truly terrible has taken place. They lie across the floor in tens of thousands of pieces, the priceless antiquities of Iraq's history. The looters had gone from shelf to shelf, systematically pulling the statues and pots and amphorae of the Assyrians and the Babylonians, the Sumerians, the Medes, the Persians and the Greeks, and hurling them onto the concrete. Our feet crunched on the wreckage of 5,000-year-old marble plinths and stone statuary and pots that had endured every siege of Baghdad, every invasion of Iraq throughout history, only to be destroyed when the United States came to, quote, liberate, unquote, the cities. Not since the Taliban was there such an orgy of destruction. This is what has been done to our history. This has been what has been done to our culture. A man in a gray gown stated as he flicked our torches across piles of once perfect Sumerian pots, Greek statues now headless, armless, in the storeroom of Iraq's National Archaeological Museum.
John Burns in the New York Times, an article that was distributed widely and published by other newspapers on Sunday, April 13th, went on to describe what had been in the National Museum of Iraq, which had recorded a history of civilizations, he said, that began to flourish in the fertile plains of Mesopotamia more than 7,000 years ago.
Mesopotamia.
It took only 48 hours for looters to destroy the museum and to carry away at least 170,000 artifacts. What did it include? Thousands of inscribed clay tablets, many of them dealing with literary, mathematical, administrative, and legal matters. Among them, some of the oldest examples of human writing and Hammurabi's code, one of the humanity's earliest written codes of law. Artifacts from Ur, the city that was the birthplace of the patriarch Abraham, according to the Bible. The copper head of an Akkadian king, at least 4,300 years old, its features mutilated. A religious vase from the ancient city of Uruk. It was estimated age 5,000 years. Some 1,600 ancient coins, and a vast collection of Assyrian artifacts, including colossal statues and sculptures that once graced the royal palaces and the gateways of the cities of Khorsabad and Nimrud. These and many others among the 28 galleries and the vaults that had huge steel doors guarding the storage chambers that descend floor after floor into unlit darkness. According to John Burns, thousands of looters poured into the museum after daybreak on Thursday and remained until dusk on Friday. Nowhere were any of the U.S. military who were throughout Baghdad. Nowhere were they present at the museum to prevent the looting of a solid gold harp from the Sumerian era, which began about 3,360 B.C. and went on until 2000 B.C. or to protect the gold necklaces, the bracelets, and the earrings from the Sumerian dynasty that were at least 4,000 years old. The history of the development of civilization throughout the Tigris and Euphrates, the Fertile Crescent Valley.
And as Robert Fisk describes it, glass cases that held 40,000-year-old stone and flint objects that were smashed open and lay empty. No one knows what happened to the Assyrian reliefs from the royal palace of Khorsabad, the 5,000-year-old seals, the 45-year-old gold leaf earrings once buried with Sumerian princesses. It will take decades to sort through what has been left broken, destroyed, smashed, stone torsos, the tomb treasures, the jewelry glinting amid the piles of smashed pots. But as Fisk describes in horror, the devastation of a culture, the vandalizing of civilization in Baghdad's great museum, comparable to the destruction of the great library in Alexandria. He states the following. I contacted the Civil Affairs Unit of the United States Marines in Sadoun Street. I gave them the exact location of the museum and the condition of its contents. The captain told me, well, we may be able to get down there. Too late. Iraq's history has been trashed, whom the Americans unleashed on a city during a presumptive liberation. You are American, a woman shouted me in English yesterday. Go back. Get out of here. You are not wanted. We hated Saddam, but we hate Bush. We hate you. You are destroying this city. You have come here to do that. You are our enemy. You are our occupier.
The Sydney Morning Herald on April 14th, in an article, Rich Past Stripped as Future in Tatters, revealed that the Baghdadis are acutely aware that the Marines threw a cordon around only one public building in Baghdad. This is in addition to protecting and occupying the international airport. That public building was the high-rise headquarters of the oil ministry. And a revealing article appeared in the Sunday Herald that really gives you some idea of the purpose of this looting. It's an article by Liam McDougall, and it's dated April 7th. This is the Sunday Herald in the United Kingdom. Quote, fears that Iraq's heritage will face widespread looting at the end of the Gulf War have been heightened after a group of wealthy art dealers secured a high-level meeting with the U.S. administration. It has emerged that a coalition of antiquities collectors and arts lawyers, reports the Sunday Herald, calling itself the American Council for Cultural Policy, the ACCP, met with U.S. Defense and State Department officials prior to the start of military action. And what were they doing? They were asking for a relaxation of Iraq's tight restrictions on the ownership and export of antiquities. Its treasurer, William Perlstein, has described Iraq's laws as retentionist and said he would support a post-war government that would make it easier to have antiquities dispersed to the United States. Ralph?
Take note, please. The article in the Sunday Herald is very explicit and clear. The meetings that they are describing took place on the 7th of April. It was much prior to the looting of the museum. And the headline of this story reads, U.S. plans to loot antiquities. U.S. plans to loot antiquities. And it describes how William Perlstein, the treasurer of this group of influential dealers in conjunction with the U.S. military, contrived to be able to steal the most valued items. Here is John Burns on the same subject. Mr. Hassan spent 34 years developing the museum's collection. He watched as men with plans took sledgehammers to specific locked display cases, fired rifles and pistols to break the locks. If many of the looters were from the impoverished districts, these merchants knew exactly what they were looking for. They took those particular items of value. They knew where they were located. They went to the safes. Absolutely. They knew the most valued pieces in our collection, where they were, and they targeted them with design, reports John Burns.
And again, in the Sydney Morning Herald, it confirms what Ralph is saying. In the article, it notes, it did not matter that the looters were given it points to the fact that the looters were given a hand. It states, the Fort Knox-like doors, where the gold is in the United States, in Fort Knox, these doors to the vaults must have been opened for them because they were unmarked. None of the museum staff was going to admit this. But it's clear that whoever held the keys had been there on the spot. This is the Sydney Morning Herald reporting April 14th. Now, something else appeared that is also gives you insight into the plundering of Baghdad. An article appeared April 11th in Dagens Nyheter, Sweden's largest newspaper, and it's based in Stockholm. It's an article by Ole Rothenberg, and it's based on an interview that he did with Khalid Bayomi, who has been going to the University of Lund and is a researcher on the Middle East. And Khalid Bayomi had gone to Baghdad as soon as the fighting had begun. And this is what he said. He was present. He saw U.S. soldiers shoot two Sudanese guards who stood at their post outside a local administration building. Then the U.S. soldiers blasted apart the doors to the building, and from their tanks came eager calls in Arabic. Now remember, Khalid Bayomi is an Arabic speaker. And what the calls were saying was they were encouraging the people to come close to the U.S. soldiers. At first, the soldiers were shooting people, but later what they were doing was they were calling out from their tanks that people should go and take what they wanted in the building. And then Bayomi reports, I stood in a large crowd and watched this. They did not partake in the plundering, but they dared not to interfere. Many had tears of shame in their eyes as they watched other people plunder. The next morning, the plundering spread to the Modern Museum, which lies a quarter mile farther north. There were crowds there, too. And what he also saw is that next to this building and other buildings, he witnessed, and he said, I was standing only 300 yards from where the Sudanese guards had been murdered, and he saw the tank not only crush that building, but it crushed the entrance to the Justice Department and also a neighboring building, and the U.S. soldiers were encouraging the crowds to come in and take whatever they wanted. So he's asked, are you saying that it was U.S. troops who initiated the plundering? And he responds, absolutely. The lack of jubilant scenes meant that the American troops needed pictures of Iraqis who in different ways demonstrated hatred for Saddam's regime. Ralph?
Beyond that, Al Jazeera reports specifically that wherever U.S. troops were asked to protect the artifacts, the museums, the libraries, the hospitals from looting, not only did they fail to prevent this, which could have been accomplished by having simple guards standing at the door, let alone a tank opposite, they don't hesitate to fire tanks into residential houses and down entire streets, at passenger cars, at any group of people. But not one single instance of a soldier or a tank seeking to protect the National Library, the National Museum, on the contrary, facilitating it. The U.S. soldiers and commanders declaring we're not going to stand in the way of the taking of a few mattresses. And the tone set by Rumsfeld, as Al Jazeera reported, in location after location, and not only in Baghdad, not only were the U.S. troops and special forces not obstructing this plunder, they were encouraging it, they were facilitating it, and they were resisting, as Robert Fisk recounts, any request, any effort to protect the cultural heritage or the hospitals or the ministries from an organized looting campaign. It's untidy, said Donald Rumsfeld. Freedom is untidy. He proceeded to ridicule the disappearance of the priceless artifacts from the National Museum or the books from the University of Mosul, the oldest and best university in the entire Middle East. Rumsfeld stated, stuff happens. And then he began to ridicule the press, who he stated were showing the same vase being taken over and over again. The image you see on television over and over, the same picture of some one person walking out of a building with a vase, and you see it 20 times, and you think, my goodness, were there that many vases? Is it possible there were that many vases in the whole country, says Donald Rumsfeld? The vandals, the plunderers, the facilitators, the people who not only designed the destruction of the civilian infrastructure of an entire society, but deployed the plunder as a mask for the real disaster that has been inflicted on the population at large.
And a report comes from as far away as Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, by Michael Kahn for the San Francisco Chronicle Foreign Service. First came Khan, now Bush. Mongols, Americans in Baghdad, invaders seem similar. And he explains what he means. When it comes to fighting a war in Iraq, the United States and its most famous predecessors, the Mongols of the 13th century, have a lot in common. Both the Mongols and the Bushes, for instance, attacked Iraq twice. The Mongolian version of shock and awe so devastated Baghdad that the city was left unrecognizable. Homes and mosques were razed, and between 200,000 and 800,000 people were killed. The war's chronicles at the time of the Mongolian invasion said that the Tigris River ran red with blood, and then black from ink after the barbarians threw the caliph of Baghdad's library into the river. And it is Michael Kahn, who's referring to the Mongols as barbarians. Then the Mongols rolled the ruler of Baghdad into a carpet, trampling him to death with horses. Today, you would like to note that the United States uses 2,000-pound JDAM bombs, four and six at a time. Instead of trampling with horses, they trampled the Baghdadis with 2,000-pound JDAMs and Moab's 21,000-pound mother-of-all bombs, the massive ordnance of the Moab, as well as the missiles that are fired from the Abrams and the Bradley fighting machines and the Gatling guns that are coated with depleted uranium.
In the South, the Financial Times reports that the looting and the plundering proceeded in a particular manner. The Iraqi Coalition of National Unity, the ICNU, special forces and CIA prepared Iraqi units brought to Iraq and to Najaf. Quote, "They steal and they steal," said a man living near the Madrasa al-Taif school. "They threaten us. They state, we are with the Americans and you can do nothing to us." The looting by the ICNU and other armed gangs were brought to the city by the United States. They proceeded to loot building after building, hospital after hospital, school after school. The Iraqi Coalition of National Unity, under the direction of U.S. Special Forces, and reported in detail, the head of the ICNU stated he is a former colonel in the Iraqi artillery who has been working with the Special Forces in the Central Intelligence Agency since 1996. He is now the acting mayor of Najaf, and his group has taken over administration of the city.
Now, along with the looting of all the ministries, there has been the breakdown of currency in Iraq, as reported by the Wall Street Journal today by Simeon Kerr, reporting from Basra. Dinar's collapse leaves many without way to buy goods. Now, the reason for this is the banks have been broken into. While the oil ministry is protected, while the airport is protected, the banks have not. And he notes from Basra, in the confusion reigning in the southern port city of 1.3 million people, rumors are rife that the widely circulated 250 and 10,000 dinar notes bearing Mr. Hussein's likeness will be withdrawn in 6 months, knocking the value of both notes lower. Now, we can say that right now that the United States not only will take over all functions in Iraq, as we'll discuss in the second part of today's Taking Aim, but they will control the currency of Iraq. So what he notes is that speculation that the many 10,000 dinar notes that have been stolen from the bank, and for which the banks have the serial numbers and are already publishing lists, that these dinar notes will be canceled. The relevance of this is that the 10,000 dinar notes are the notes with which most workers are paid, and so they will not have any purchasing power. So not only has water, electricity, and the phone networks collapsed because of the incredible devastation by the U.S. bombing and the attacks on the ground from the tanks, but right now there will be no monetary currency that is reliable with which the people can purchase food. Ralph?
As Lamont made very clear, to impose colonization and to prepare the ground for a repressive regime of its own, the Bush administration strategists needed chaos to set in. The looting, the devastation of the hospitals, the libraries, the absolute criminal destruction of an entire culture and civilization and the world's priceless artifacts in the National Museum of Iraq were a policy of design. And indeed, the reports in the not only in the Financial Times but by Brendan O'Neill in a news internet news article made clear what is taking place. The Iraqi Coalition of National Unity has taken over towns throughout southern Iraq, and Hayy al-Ansar, with the backing of U.S. Special Forces, the ICNU, quote, is looting and terrorizing the cities with impunity. The looting and terrorizing our special forces and the Iraqi hitmen who are proceeding to do in southern Iraq what has been reported so widely now in Baghdad. But what is it as well, as Al Jazeera has pointed out, as the Financial Times has emphasized, and as reports in The Independent and The Guardian of London make clear, what is it that is being deflected and concealed by this terrible slaughter and onslaught on the culture of Iraq? Quote, a picture of killing inflicted on a sprawling city has grown more unbearable by the minute. Suzanne Goldenberg in The Guardian. Death's embrace gives the bodies intimacies they never knew in life. Strangers bloodied and blackened wrap their arms around their others, hugging them close in death. A man's hand rose disembodied from the bottom of the heap of corpses to rest on the belly of a man near the top. A blue stone in his ring glinted as an Iraqi orderly opened the door of the morgue, admitting daylight and the sound of a man's sobs to the cold silence within. Here are some of the results of the devastation that has happened in city after city, mere fragments in a larger picture of flight and destruction inflicted on a sprawling city of 5 million that grows more unbearable by the minute. The looted hospitals reflect casualty wards. In Al-Kindi Hospital, the main trauma center of eastern Baghdad, a girl, long black plait held off her forehead by a red Alice band, was laid out beside her little brother. Their mother lay across the aisle, beige dress soaked in blood from hem to armpits. Another brother slumped on the floor, insensible to the fact that he was sitting in his mother's blood. Neighbors who followed the families to hospital said the girl had been called Nur Saba and was 12 years old. Her brother Abdul Qadir, who began the day neatly dressed in dark trousers and a check shirt, was between 4 and 5. Their two small corpses were loaded on the same gurney and taken to the morgue. The nurses were reduced to tears. The elderly female orderlies constantly lugging blood-encrusted gurneys back and forth to the ambulances and battered cars that pulled up at the gates wailed until they were hoarse and thumped their pain on the walls. Doctors turned to watch the small bodies pass, the best they can offer by way of a ceremony. The abandoned mother, while Saba on her gurney, she's fatal, said one of them. The doctors could do no more but watch her die. And the report goes on. Hospital after hospital, the looted hospitals in Iraq. What is being concealed here is the utter slaughter and devastation of the civilian population. The horror. Al-Kindi Hospital doctors had already passed the point of exhaustion. All 12 operating theaters were in action, and still the wounded and dead keep coming in. The doctors try to maintain a clinical detachment, reeling off the injuries that they see. Burnt faces, disemboweled torsos, fractured limbs, the report continues in The Guardian, skulls, bodies coated with an overall glaze of blood. They speak of the technical difficulties of operating without generators, with everything stripped, with surgical and other supplies gone. In one location, 15 bodies packed together in just one of the containers at the back of the hospital, a constant ebb and flow, the speedy, constant arrival of dismembered bodies of children, of women. It is very difficult to see a child lying in front of you, and I have seen 3 children. I keep seeing the faces of my own children, these children. It could be my kid. It could be my cousin. And the Americans continue, and they do not stop, not only in Baghdad, but throughout Iraq. That is what is being concealed. That is what is being deflected. That is what is being turned to a concern about plunder by the population itself, the victim population, the most desperately poor, the Shia of Saddam City, who are brought to the locations, who are encouraged to go and plunder while the troops stand by, while the commanders of the U.S. Army smirk and talk about a few mattresses as the cultural legacy of an entire civilization is destroyed forever.
Mythical Garden of Eden, now a wasteland, reports Agence France-Presse from Alcorna on April 12th. The Garden of Eden, the mythic place where the Tigris and Euphrates rivers join, the cradle of mankind where Adam came to pray to God. It's today today is a desolate wasteland of excrement, cracked paving stones, and bullet holes. The eucalyptus known as Adam's Tree, a place of holy pilgrimage for Christians, Muslims, and Jews alike, stands bleached and dead. This is the watery junction of the Euphrates and the Tigris, was the home to the first of modern man. Mesopotamia. This is where the alphabet was invented and our days divided into 24 hours. It was here where the first epic poems were composed to hand down our collective history and where we learned how to cultivate crops. According to Agence France-Presse, here, as elsewhere in Iraq, the Garden of Eden is now a mudflat polluted with urban waste where children fight packs of dogs plunging to swim and fish. Look at what is left, reports Khalif, who had been one of the caretakers of this Garden of Eden. It is a tragedy. It is a tragedy.
Tears aplenty in the dark city, writes Nicholas Harak on April 13th in the United Press International. As the U.S. troops stand us outside, the tears for the dead, the tears of pain, the tears for lives wiped away in Baghdad Sunday at the Baghdad School of Music and Ballet, where classrooms were adorned by sketches of Verdi and Bach, by photos of classes going back to the 1950s. The tears are for violins and violas and oboes. Across from the National Zoo, with the tanks nestled outside, Baghdad has been the victim of plunder. The school had survived the bombing. The children's choir from the second grade of this elementary and high school were practicing an adaptation of Finlandia by Jean Sibelius for a concert to be given on April 21st. Then the plunder began. Smashed instruments, hauled pianos into open yards where the strings were torn out, music, including original composition of the Baghdad Symphony, trashed, the mirrors of the ballet studios smashed, a couple of trumpets and small instruments is all that was left of the vandalism. The teacher sat on the floor and cried, one holding a toddler in her arms. Another sat at a piano, fingers racing over the keys as though it was the last time she would ever play. Cynthia Banas leaned against the wall, tears streaming down her face as she looked at the snapshots of the children strewn on the floor. There is no hope. There is no hope.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you over WBAI New York 99.5 FM and on the internet at www.wbai.org. Our program today, The Plundering of Iraq. You can reach us at 212-209-2953 or at takingaim@pacbell.net. Now, if you missed any part of our show today, it'll be archived on our internet site, www.wbaifree.org/takingaim. Bomb before you buy. Bomb before you buy. This plunder, this sacking of Iraq has a purpose, according to Naomi Klein in The Guardian, Monday, April 14th. What is planned in Iraq is not reconstruction, but robbery. And what Naomi Klein writes is something we've discussed on Taking Aim over and again as we talked about the intent since the 1970s of every administration in the United States in turn, be they Democrat or Republican, for the conquest of Iraq. But it is not just the story of the conquest of the oil, as Robert Tucker had written, the new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. As Naomi Klein writes, on April 6th, Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz spelled it out. The U.S.-run regime will probably last longer than 6 months. And by the time the Iraqi people have a say in choosing government, the key economic decisions about their country's future will have been made by the occupiers. And she quotes Wolfowitz, "There has to be an effective administration from day one. People need water and food and medicine, and the sewers have to work. The electricity has to work. And that's our responsibility." She notes, "The country is being treated as a blank slate on which the most ideological Washington neoliberals can design their dream economy, fully privatized, foreign-owned, and open for business."
Maya, the way in which this is being facilitated and what becomes increasingly clear as the both the rationale for the U.S. troops organizing, facilitating, and totally acquiescing in the plunder of the culture and the infrastructure and the medical facilities and the museums and libraries and music institutions of Iraq. The report in the Los Angeles Times. They're butchers, bakers, and fast food makers. They hail from Arizona and Norway, and they're here to forge a new Iraq. Who are they? They are the Iraqi National Congress's special forces, the U.S.-funded Free Iraqi Forces, most of whom were participating in the looting in southern Iraq. They are not the Wehrmacht, said Zab Sethna, advisor to Iraqi National Congress head Ahmed Chalabi, in reference to the Nazi armed force of World War II, but their motivation is equally high, unquote. Los Angeles Times, April 14th, and the Christian Science Monitor informs us that the Iraqi National Congress exiled leader Mohammed Mehsin announced that he was taking charge of Baghdad with the blessing of the U.S. authorities, and the person who was to become his deputy and the new chief of the city police in Baghdad was Brigadier General Zuhair Anuami, Saddam Hussein's top police officer. Saddam Hussein's top police officer, the new chief of the police of Baghdad, under the Iraqi National Congress, with the blessing of U.S. authorities, the repression no different, the chaos the rationale, the looting now the opportunity, the colonial regime in place. It is not Saddam Hussein who has been their concern, but only their pretext. It is the repression of the people of Iraq under a new regime that will plunder on a scale never before imagined.
And how will they contain the people, the populace, who already are saying out with the U.S. occupiers? Now, if you will recall, General Shinseki, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had stated publicly that it would take about 200,000 U.S. soldiers to contain, to occupy Iraq. And already in place, as Ralph has reported, with the hiring of the reinstitution of the Iraqi police, the United States is bringing in its own rent-a-cops, none other than the DynCorp Corporation, which has been using in ex-Yugoslavia, and it is used for instruments throughout the world, be they in Colombia or Vietnam. DynCorp in Fort Worth, Texas. Already police recruiters are currently manning the phones for DynCorp, reports Pratap Chatterjee in a special April 9th to Corp Watch. At that time, the contract hadn't yet been awarded, but it has been announced in the last couple of days that DynCorp has received the contract, the initial contract, which could reach as much as $500 million for controlling the police in Iraq.
The police, Maya, for just one moment, please. The police who are to be controlled in Iraq are to be controlled in a certain fashion. And here again, as we describe, as you recount, what DynCorp's role will be, what Halliburton's role would be, what the plundering of Iraqi's oil resources will be, we see the report in Monday's Washington Post. The push for order arises out of the chaos in Iraq. And now the generals and colonels are being brought by the U.S. forces to take charge. And the crowd of Iraqis responds. He's a murderer, one man in the crowd yelled. He's dirty, another screamed. He's taken too many bribes. But these are the people, the very, very repressive forces of the regime itself that are now being organized under U.S. CIA and Special Force direction to take control in Baghdad. The push for order arises out of the chaos in Baghdad.
And Ralph, I believe, I am convinced that the institution, the instituting of the plundering was to set the stage for the U.S. occupation of Iraq, to create the rationale for the U.S. occupation. It is not just DynCorp, which is hiring retired U.S. cops and other military police to oversee the police, which will be under retired General Jay Garner in the U.S. occupation force. In Iraq, the United States military is sending 1,200 of its military special forces over to Iraq to supervise even DynCorp and the reconstituted Ba'athist police force.
Maya, it is borne out, as you describe it, by the London Times on April 12th. British officials are compelled to defend their choice of Brigadier General Muzahim Mustafa Kanan Tamimi, Saddam Hussein's Brigadier General, who will be brought in to restore order in Basra as looting continues in the southern city. And the looting is provided as the rationale they were compelled, the British say, to put in place the Brigadier General Saddam Hussein in Basra under direct British and U.S. Special Forces control in Basra, in Nasiriyah, in Najaf, in Baghdad, a repressive apparatus now being subsumed under American control. And indeed, the report in the Washington Post on April 13th, the new mayor of Qattara, a bustling commercial and residential area, is 29-year-old Marine Lieutenant from Tatawa, New Jersey, Adam Macaluso. The new mayor is bringing back the old police and the old soldier officers in order to effect control by the United States with the repressive apparatus of the old regime.
Ralph, in discussing the fact that the U.S. forces immediately surrounded the high-rise oil ministry building in Baghdad, immediately took control of the airport, we neglected to mention that the first targets for the U.S. troops to ensure the safety of the infrastructure was the oil wells, the Ramallah oil fields. There certainly were enough U.S. troops to protect the oil fields, and the same thing is happening in the north of Iraq with Kirkuk and Mosul.
And the Observer reports, Maya, on these very lines on April 13th, Defense Secretary Jeff Hoon backs Saddam loyalists to rebuild nation. The officers and chiefs of the Ba'ath Party loyal to Saddam Hussein are to be used to restore order in all the major cities as looting and mob violence threatens to undermine coalition attempts to paint a military action against the dictator as a success. In an interview with the Observer, Defense Secretary Jeff Hoon said it is time to allow the Iraqis to build from the bottom and to include the Ba'athists, including their chief officers. We have to create as quickly as possible an air of normality. The looting has been directed at the regime, but the regime is gone, and we have to take control.
And taking control, we cannot state enough. Taking control is under the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon, the military apparatus in the United States, with retired General Jay Garner, his affiliations with JINSA and the Zionist state, his affiliations with the military-industrial complex as the president of S.Y. Coleman, a division of L3, the manufacturers of some of the sophisticated electronics in the very Tomahawk cruise missiles that rained down upon Iraq. But it is not only retired General Jay Garner who is overseeing as the supreme commander under Tommy Franks, the head of CENTCOM, another general. It is also Bruce Moore, a retired general who will be in charge of the north of Iraq, and another retired general and a Texas businessman, Roger Buck Walters, will oversee the south. He's one of the group hand-picked by the Pentagon, according to the BBC News Online.
But the main media engage in orchestrated deception. Reuters, however, has disclosed on April 12th, through a wide-angle photo in Ferdo Square, the fraudulence of the photo shown round the world of the pulling down of the statue of Saddam Hussein, which is attributed to an outpouring of spontaneous jubilation, as Reuters described it, by the Iraqi masses. But the wide-angle photo by Reuters, rather than showing a spontaneous demonstration, shows that there were less than 100 Iraqis in an empty, heavily guarded Fardis Square surrounded by American tanks and troops who actually pulled down the statue. They were special forces with 100 Iraqis there as protective coloration. And you look at the wide-angle photo and this entire square is empty except for the U.S. tanks that are circling it, and the tank right in front of the 100 people, or rather I should say right behind the 100 people as the statue is pulled down.
Now, Ralph.
The staged Baghdad rally. Maya, just let me point out the comments made by the mother of all mothers, Barbara Bush, on Good Morning America with respect to the news and the TV coverage of the war. She told Diane Sawyer that she watches none of the TV wars coverage because she said the following, Mrs. Bush, why should we hear about body bags and deaths and how many and what day? It's not relevant. Why should I waste my beautiful mind on something like that? Unquote. The cynicism, the vulgarity, the character of an imperial order that has destroyed the legacy of 5,000 years of culture in Iraq, devastated its population, and prepares for the most repressive and exploitative rule and the great plunder, the real looting of Iraq that is only just about to begin.
The real looting of Iraq, the intention was stated clearly in the online In the National Interest, the publisher none other than James Schlesinger. James Schlesinger of both the Republican and Democratic administrations. The National Interest is a joint project with the Nixon Center, and they published an article by Gerald O'Driscoll of the Cato Institute and Ariel Cohn called Privatization and the Oil Industry, a Strategy for Post-War Iraqi Reconstruction, and this was published in January of this year, January 22, 2003. And they talk about the oil sector of Iraq, which provides 95% of its hard currency earning and 60% of the country's gross domestic product, that the only way for the United States to deal with this, and this is before the U.S. invasion, they're already preparing for the U.S. occupation in January. The only way to prepare for this is the, as they say, fundamental structural reform with massive, orderly, and transparent privatization of various sectors of the economy, including the oil industry.
Maya, in the San Francisco Chronicle, there's a startling headline. Looters shake Iraq cities, the liquid wealth a mirage, The oil income will not cover the costs of rebuilding a shattered economy. And what this important article makes clear is that the looting of the oil riches and the huge profiteering that the American corporations anticipate will be into their pockets, not a penny of what is called a vast pool of liquid wealth on the Iraqi soil will go towards the reconstruction of Iraq's political and economic life. Not a penny. And the Glasgow Sunday Herald, the firms that gave to Bush get the contracts. All the American firms to get the Iraqi reconstruction contracts have bankrolled George Bush and the Republican Party with direct links to U.S. aid. But the reconstruction will mean profiteering with starvation wages to the point that not even the Iraqis will be hired because they will be considered to require more money than Filipino immigrants who are going to be brought into Iraq to work as virtual slave labor in these projects while the profits go to International Resources Group, which made, quote, significant donations to the Republican Party. Four of IRG's vice presidents held senior posts with the U.S. government's U.S. Agency for International Development and Aid. 24 of the firm's 48 technical staff working for aid. John Hemingway, the president of Stevedoring Services of America, will manage the port of Umkasar. They made personal donations to Bush and the Republican Party and were the first firm to receive the contract.
Ralph, to go back to the discussion of Iraq's oil wealth, an oil wealth that will take $20 billion alone to reconstruct the electricity apparatus through the infrastructure of electricity, which has been devastated over the years and more so with the current bombing. $20 billion alone just for the electrical infrastructure. The New York Times had an article on April 3rd, What Will Be the Model for Peace in Postwar Iraq, by Alan Krueger. And in it, he notes that the United Nations Compensation Commission from the first Gulf War received $320 billion of claims for damages against Iraq related to the first Gulf War, and that the debt of Iraq, if 50%, he notes, of Iraq's future export income is diverted to paying down this debt. Now, this is the debt from the first Gulf War and has nothing to do with the reconstruction, that alone would take more than 35 years to pay off those obligations. And this is even allowing for reasonable growth in oil exports. And he says that the United Nations has been siphoning off 28%. That's a little less than one-third of Iraq's oil export revenue to compensate the claimants from the first Gulf War.
The Billingsgate Gazette reports on April 13th, Cronyism in Iraq Contracts. And it selects Bechtel Corporation, Parsons Corporation, and Fluor as amongst those who are going to be receiving virtually a license to print money. But it singles out in particular our old friend Halliburton of Dick Cheney, because Halliburton is to receive $7 billion. The nominal justification for the $7 billion handed to Halliburton will be the putting out of fires in the oil wells, fires that don't exist. But the article states, Iraq's oil infrastructure is in need of rehabilitation, and Halliburton has an unlimited mandate to undertake the project. In short, subsidized with $7 billion, they will proceed to seize the oil, to replenish the oil fields for their own benefit.
And I would like to interject that we did, many months ago, a three-part series called Crony Capitalism. And one of those parts deals specifically with the historical roots of Brown and Root. That is the division of Halliburton that is really the recipient of this $7 billion. It's Brown and Root that has been constructing the military bases through the contract without any limit, the LOGCAP contract, to build bases throughout the world. And they did so for 80,000 troops in Kuwait already, and they will be constructing the U.S. military bases in Iraq. And it is, again, Brown and Root that has been the recipient of, will be the recipient of the $7 billion contract also, you might say virtually without limit, for reconstruction of the oil well, starting with the putting out of the non-existent fires. The eight wells that had been on fire have already been capped.
And there's a particular dimension to this cronyism and this, enormous looting project, which is essentially the nature of the kleptocracy that are the rulers of the American capital. Here is the Observer in London on April 13th. Scandal hit U.S. firms, wins the key contracts. A U.S. military contractor accused of human rights violations has won the multi-billion dollar contract to police post-Saddam Iraq. DynCorp has been awarded a sensitive contract. And it is a great scandal, according to the Observer, because it is DynCorp which had been found to engage in human rights abuses throughout Bosnia, to the point where they had arranged illegal sex rings for DynCorp's colleagues of 13 and 14-year-olds across Bosnia, who were convicted of the same, and now they are going to be organizing the police force in Iraq, across the country, with the very special forces units who have been organizing the looting in the south, the real plundering of Iraq about to begin.
The rape and pillage of Iraq, devastation, bomb, and then take control. This, the plundering of Iraq. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's takingaim@pacbell.net, or at our voicemail 212-209-2953. On the internet, we are at www.wbaifree.org/takingaim, where there's an archive of our programs. Tapes and CDs are available from us. We're looking forward to hearing from you, and we'll be back with you next week.